Blog Talk Radio.
Start it.
Johnny on the track.
Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we're here.
Yes, 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 you guys. Once again, this is another episode of Inside the Octagon, hosted by yours truly. I'm Kalani Lua, along with Leo Showers. Leo, welcome back, man. How you doing?
Thanks, brother. Man, I'm sunburned as hell, but just absolutely happy to be back and talk about some fights.
Right on, man. Well, glad to have you back on the show. Hey, you know what? Sunburn is a B, but glad that's all you came back. Well, hopefully that's all you came back with. We'll talk about that offline if we need to, but... everyone that listen out there, this is Inside the Octagon, which comes to you guys every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This show is brought to you by the Sports Grid Podcast, which you guys can listen to every Thursday evening between 6 and 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Leo, so we're right here in what is considered the hottest month of the year in most places, August, the deadbeat of summer, especially here in Nevada. But we've had a big summer so far in the UFC. 11 key events within a 10-week span. Now, unfortunately, we don't have any more UFC events until September, but hey, the promotion has given us a lot of events in these past couple of months, including 4 brand new champions. What do you make of the summer that was UFC?
Man, how many memorable moments in such a short span of time, and in a slow year for the UFC, they just managed to kind of, you know, make this long stretch of fights that they were all good. A lot of fights delivered, and then they end with a big crescendo at UFC 214. I know there was the UFC Mexico right after that last week, but that felt like the dessert for the big entree of UFC 214, which delivered in my book. And it shows that even in a slow year, the UFC can manage to put on some big fights that people are excited about. Bravo for the UFC. I think that was a very exciting 10 weeks.
You know, the UFC tries to take certain parts of the year where they want to put on these big events, where they want to put on consistent events. And the summer is one of the best ones. Most, you know, the young kids are out of school on summer vacation. Most people around the country, they take a summer vacation of their own from work, try to get away. And hey, you know what? What's a better getaway than going to a UFC event live and in person? So it's awesome that the UFC does this. And the good thing about it is when they're able to have these events, especially the big ones, and the cards, for the most part, stay intact. One of the big ones we just recently saw was UFC 214. All the main figures on that card stayed there. Now, Cerrone and Lawler, which was added to it, injury took them off the UFC 213 card, but still in all, they were able to be on. So, that to me, that is one of the things that I marvelize at, and I think it's real key and why these events are so successful, because injuries, as you and me both know, have really derailed the sport of MMA at times in certain events that made them really watered down. But with 4 brand new champions, Max Holloway, Robert Whittaker, Chris Cyborg, and John Jones, I guess you could say, you know, reclaiming his throne, I got to ask you, out of these 4 brand new champions, who do you think is going to have the best title run?
Well, I mean, like I said, that crescendo that ended UFC 214, that was John Jones reclaiming his title that he never really lost. And he showed us that he is the most dominant martial artist that we have seen in the octagon. And I think he made that point against Daniel Cormier. And so, I mean, he looks so unbeatable that he's already cleared out a division. Maybe he might do a rematch against Gustafsson at some point. But after that, it sounds like he's off to the heavyweight division and try to dominate there. But certainly John Jones at the front of that list in terms of longevity, and a guy that doesn't look like he's going to be losing anytime soon at his division.
Yeah, no, definitely. John Jones, considering what he's been able to do in previous time and what he plans on doing now, you got to look at it and say, wow, you know, what he can do is very possible. You look at Chris Cyborg and her dominance over the years, and then you look at someone like Max Holloway, who, outside of his Conor McGregor loss, has really looked superior ever since his Conor McGregor loss, has really looked superior in almost every fashion in his matchups going forward. There hasn't been that battle where, oh, it was a nail biter or it was just by a hair. No, he's pretty much made easy work of all of his opponents, and he's got a potential opponent in the future, which we'll get to later in the show. So I think Max Holloway has a chance of really going on a nice run, especially if he decides to stay at featherweight for an extended period of time. I know he's talked about moving up to lightweight as he's gotten older and his body gets bigger. Some super fights up there if he remains champion. So that is going to be interesting to keep an eye on indeed. I want to ask you this. And if you could just pick one moment from these UFC summer events, just one in particular that you would say it stood out the most to you, which one would you choose?
Well, I think the easy answer to that would be the Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier saga that took place a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, Jon Jones being a classy winner in his return and just putting a seal to that long rivalry that, you know, we only saw two fights out of, but we saw so much from these two guys. But a little bit outside the norm here, I want to go with Volkan Ozdemir. I mean, in that 10-week span that we talked about earlier, Volkan Ozdemir fought twice and arrived, and just this guy's knocking out contenders left and right, and he's looked so amazing, and he's climbed up the ranks in less than a year in the UFC, and it looks like he's probably setting himself up for a title run pretty soon here. So Volkan Ozdemir is a guy to be looking for, just knocking people out left and right.
No, definitely. He certainly put his name on the map with these two performances, especially the last one in spectacular fashion over Jimmy Manuel, a result that I don't think many people saw coming, especially that quick. For me, I would have to say, obviously, Jon Jones is up there. Max Holloway, you know, being Hawaiian myself, seeing a local boy get one, shoots. But I got to go with Chris Cyborg, the most dominant and best female fighter in combat sports history. All these years, you know, you have the steroid test that she failed years back. Then you had a drama with the UFC of not wanting to bring her in. Dana White criticizes her, calling her Wanderlei Silva in a dress. Ronda Rousey, obviously there's a super fight there. She doesn't want to fight her. She critiques her muscles, and she looks manly. And sit down. Got my dogs over here playing guard dog now. And when the UFC does decide to bring her in, they say you got to do it at 140, which we saw was, even though she made the weight both times, was a brutal weight cut for her. Last one nearly took her life. And I don't think a lot of people, especially fans, really understand how brutal some of these weight cuts are for some athletes. For her to finally get a chance at the 145 title, which I don't know why they had a fight at 209. I guess just because they needed a title fight on the card. But that title fight should have been Cyborg initially for the belt. But nonetheless, she gets the title. So I got to say kudos to Chris Cyborg, battling through all the scrutiny, all the drama, and all the heels and sacrifices she's made to come together. Now we're looking at the woman who has been a Strikeforce, Invicta, and UFC Women's Featherweight Champion. All I'm saying is, what more does this woman have to do? So I was very impressed by that indeed.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. I mean, Cyborg is just an absolute star that the UFC has on her hands. And if people know her story and know, you know, what she's been through to get to where she is, I think you can have a really big megastar in your hands with Cyborg. So I completely agree with you there.
No, that's so true. That's so true, Leon. And hopefully, you know, now with the UFC, you know, with her being a champion and the UFC, you know, Dana White kind of admitting, you know, we've dropped the ball with Chris Cyborg, really, and we need to start riding ship. Hopefully going forward, they start putting the promotion and telling the story of Chris Cyborg, even if they do the documentaries or inside the cage with the fighter, something of that nature to where people, as you said, can really find out her story and look and say, man, this woman, you know, she may not be a swimsuit model of the year. Well, maybe in a swimsuit because, you know, that body, but you know what I mean? But she's got a tremendous story that I think would inspire a lot of people, just like Ronda Rousey's story was very inspirational as well. Now, speaking of stories and in some ways inspiration, Leo, I don't know if you heard this. There's kind of a big fight happening August 26th right here in our backyard. It's some boxer by the name of Floyd Mayweather taking on some UFC crazy nutbag by the name of Conor McGregor. Don't know if you've heard about it, but in the news recently, and more specifically this week, former two-time boxing champion Paulie Malignaggi, who is now a retired boxer and a Showtime boxing analyst, he was called in to be a sparring partner of Conor McGregor's. Now, during the Maymac World Tour, just for the fans, for a quick summary, during that tour, after the London press conference, McGregor was doing an interview and was asked, hey, you know, you and Paulie Malignaggi, we're hearing rumors that you might bring him in as a sparring partner. What can you say about that? Conor said, yes, we are in talks, and Paulie's going to pay for the comments he's made about me. Paulie in the past has been critical of Conor McGregor when he was rumored to fight Floyd Mayweather. Obviously, one's a boxer, one's an MMA guy trying to get into boxing. So there's going to be some tension there. Now, I know you was away and out of town and out the country for a little bit, Leo. I don't know, were you able to see any of the pictures or any of the stuff that was going online between these two?
Absolutely. I've been following this left and right. And, man, what a colossal failure by the McGregor camp to let this happen, because now it's just such a big distraction that's not helping anybody here. I guess, you know, if you heard a big-time boxer offered to be McGregor's new sparring partner, so we'll talk about that later on the show, but this is such a huge distraction that Conor McGregor does not have the time to deal with right now. I think he should be concentrating on other things other than drama. So, but I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, Malignaggi's leaking everything now, so that's just something that Conor's going to have to deal with.
Yeah, and for the fans listening, just in case you're unfamiliar with it or you just forgot, just real quick, what happened was there were some pictures leaked of their sparring session where Paulie Malignaggi was on the ground, and he didn't like the fact. Hold on. He didn't like the fact of how the thing was being portrayed. He was saying, "Let them show the video unedited and show that I actually beat. I was giving a whooping to Conor McGregor." And then, you know, that one thing led to another. He's no longer with the camp. And like you said, two-time Olympian medalist Vasily Lomachenko has offered, undefeated in the pro ranks, has offered to spar Conor McGregor for his remaining weeks in camp. Leo, I want to ask you. You said this is a big distraction. I want to ask you this. For Conor McGregor, we know that, okay, he's going into boxing and he needs all the help he can get. Given what, you know, kind of what I said and what we've been following, now you said it was a clusterfuck, but do you think there was some, how can I word this? Do you think Paulie Malignaggi is right in what he's saying, or do you think it's just sour grapes considering how he was betrayed and he's kind of letting his pride get in the way of what really happened?
Well, if you listen to Paulie Malignaggi's story, it sounded like it was just a list of things that were brewing in the Conor McGregor camp, and one thing just led to another, and then it was the final straw that broke the camel's back was those pictures that leaked that made it seem like Conor had knocked down Paulie Malignaggi when, in fact, he said it was a pushdown. So I think the first mistake was getting those pictures leaked because, you know, there's that stuff about, you know,
Lee, are you there? Leo?
Hello, can you hear me?
Well, now I can hear you. I was going to say, you got to love technology, man. It does wonders, but sometimes it really likes to kick you in the rear.
Oh, yeah. Well, so as I was saying, the pictures leaked on McGregor's side, and then I guess Paulie Malignaggi thought that was enough to say, hey, I mean, the NDA was broken, so now I'm just going to talk about everything. I think Paulie Malignaggi took it a little bit too far, but it was McGregor's mistake to let those pictures leak on the first place.
You know, I'm kind of torn on this whole Conor versus Paulie situation because, one, I get where Paulie's coming from. Like, look, we did have the non-disclosure agreement. We weren't going to talk about what was going on here. But you do want to hype up the fight, and you do want to post things that are going to get people interested, show improvement, whether it's forged or not. So, and Paulie knows this. He's a boxer. He's been in there with some of the best. He knows that going forward that, you know, you want things to show. Now, granted, Floyd Mayweather, among a lot of boxers, don't allow their sparring sessions to be filmed. But we have seen on Showtime's All Access or HBO's 24/7 with Floyd Mayweather. We've seen where after the sparring session, they've shown video of sparring partners being bloodied. Floyd's shirt's got blood on it, and he's talking trash and this and that, hyping the fight up for what, you know, for what. Oh, wait, did he put a real beat down on him? Oh, man. So to me, I kind of feel like Paulie let his pride in a way But I feel like Paulie kind of let his ego the best of it right here, just because he knows that this is a big fight and that they are going to put the hype behind it. And to allow a picture to go out there and be shown, and you now want to be looked at as, I didn't get knocked down. It's almost like, well, dude, you know how the game is played. So I don't know. I kind of feel like Paulie kind of let his ego get the best of him here instead of just taking a licks and just saying, hey, it is what it is. You know, the people who were there know the truth that I really didn't get knocked down. It was a push, and we can move on from here. And if you guys don't believe me, watch what happens August 26th. If McGregor loses, kind of told you so.
Yeah, and it sounds like, I mean, maybe Paulie Malignaggi is still trying to gun for that Conor McGregor fight that he was gunning for that earlier last year. So maybe this is his way of setting up a fight with Conor McGregor at some point. You know, that's a money fight for him as well.
No, and, you know, if anything, that is a smart move because you already have the rivalry kind of built in from, as you said, from last year when he was vying for it, and now you got this going on. So it would make sense that regardless of how Conor McGregor does against Floyd Mayweather, hey, if he wants to dive into boxing once again, he's already got a set opponent who he's kind of familiar with and somebody who, you know, like Floyd, you know, you could say is slightly past their prime, retired, coming back. Okay, you know, that could kind of work. Now, Paulie isn't necessarily the biggest name in boxing out there. I know there's another guy who's a redhead by the name of Canelo Alvarez who might be saying, hey, be bold, like his commercial with Stallone. I'll take the fight. So maybe that can happen. But we'll see after August 25th. But, Leo, Paulie brought this up, and I wanted to ask you what you thought about this. He says while they were sparring, Conor McGregor did not react well to body shots. Obviously, he gave a real in-depth analogy of it, but he doesn't react well to body shots. And says after about four or five rounds, he noticed Conor McGregor was slowing down, wasn't talking trash, and you could tell that he was sucking for air. And he did catch a second win a little bit later, but that's also when Paulie lost his leg. So I got to ask you, should we be worried as MMA fans that body shots and cardio could be the downfall for Conor McGregor against Mayweather?
Now, here's what I think, why I think this Paulie Malignaggi deal was absolutely critical for Conor McGregor, and I think it was a fatal mistake, is the reason people might want to buy this fight is because they might want to see an upset for the ages. I mean, Conor McGregor, that's how they build him. He's the upset king, right? He does what nobody thinks he's going to do, and he does it anyway. Now, if you want to buy a $100 pay-per-view, you want to have that illusion that maybe Conor McGregor is going to go in there and shock the world. But this Paulie Malignaggi, you know, now he's talking about he gasses after four rounds and he doesn't take body shots well. Well, that now you're diminishing Conor McGregor's chances, and people might not be interested that, you know, this might be the reality. We're just going to get another Floyd Mayweather fight. So I think that's where Paulie just kind of maybe crossed the line. I think he said a little bit too much. And he had even said it himself, you know, at some point, I'm not going to talk about everything right now, but at some point in the future, I will. And he didn't wait, not even a day. So he didn't even wait after the fight was over. So this is kind of what takes the gas a little bit out of the interest for the Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather fight. I think they might lose a little bit of fire in that.
Well, to his credit, Leo, he did say the future. He didn't say how far into the future. Like you said, he only waited a day, but it's still the future. So, well, I would say this. I would say if nothing else, I think, people do want to see the upset. Obviously, Floyd, being the character that he is Money Mayweather, out of the ring issues that he's had in court, people would love to see him fall, especially considering that, you know, he throws it in his riches in your face. And he's 49 and old. People want to see perfection ruined. So there's that. I also think, you know, this is when we talked about this before, Leo, this is one of the reasons why I said I would have really liked it if Conor McGregor had a full year of training for Floyd. Not because it would have got him that much closer to beating Floyd Mayweather or would have caught him up. It would have been the simple things that Conor could have worked on to improve his chances of having some success. For instance, number one being his cardio. In MMA, one of the big knocks on Conor McGregor is he's an 8-minute fighter. You know, he's not somebody who can go deep into the deep waters and still be as effective. And he did have a 5-round war with Nate Diaz, but we clearly saw that around the third round, we started to see a different Conor McGregor than we saw initially, throwing more 1-2 combinations, then moving away, not a lot of zip on his power, heavy breathing, and avoiding a lot of the clinch with Nate Diaz. So there is the issue of that. The body shots, there is something to be said. When you take on a boxer or a specialist in any sport, it is tremendously hard to prepare for what they can do specifically well. Damian Maia is a perfect example in MMA. Even though he just lost to Tyron Woodley, Damian Maia on the ground can probably submit any fighter in the UFC on the UFC roster in any weight division. It doesn't matter whether it's Brock Lesnar or Demetrius Johnson. He can probably submit anybody because he's that good in jiu-jitsu. Now, if you can neutralize that like Tyron Woodley did, well, then it's ineffective. But if you go to the ground, well, then you're in a world of hurt. And I think with boxers, you know, their specialty is punching. And I think no matter how well you are at punching in MMA, it's just a different level at the boxing rank. So with McGregor, that would have been another thing I would like for him to have a longer training camp for. He could prepare not only his cardio, but to take punches from a real boxer and to maybe work on some more weapons going forward. But it is what it is in that regard. We'll see if it was just a bunch of wolf tickets by Paulie because he was angered at what happened with him and Conor, or if what he said does hold out to be true. And we see, well, Conor go down in a spectacular fashion, 2-1 Floyd Mayweather. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's looking like the new picture of the fight. I, you know, at some point I was thinking maybe Conor's going to last 12 rounds. He might win, you know, the first couple of rounds, 3 rounds or something like that. But now with this new information, I think, you know, Floyd Mayweather's probably going to take a round or two to figure Conor out. And after that, he's just going to start working the body. I mean, that's such an underutilized tool that we have in MMA that, you know, they're almost non-existent. But in boxing, and especially with Floyd Mayweather, he's such a master at jabbing the body, just attacking the body in general. And he gets better as the fight goes on. It just sounds like a tired Conor McGregor is going to get TKO'd, you know, due to fatigue, and he's probably going to, you know, catch one on the chin.
No, definitely. But that is why we step in there to fight, so that we can see what happens. Now, speaking of seeing what happens, on the other side of the coin, Floyd Mayweather has, you know, he said not only during a press conference and afterwards, but, you know, he's coming out saying, hey, on paper, Conor McGregor has every advantage for him. Age, size, power, momentum, the fact that I'm older, I'm 40 years old, been retired for 2 years. You know, Floyd and his camp, they really have let on that Floyd, you know, he's kind of lost his step. He's not the same. Training camp is real grueling on his body. You know, there's a video out where he's saying, man, I don't want to get up and do this no more. And, you know, there's a famous line from former middleweight champion Marvin Hagler. It's tough to go out there and run and do the proper training for a big fight when you're waking up in silk sheets. And we know what type of sheets Floyd Mayweather is waking up in. But I got to ask you, do you think all this hoopla about Conor McGregor has all the advantages, I'm old and rusty, and Mayweather saying, you know, he's going to come after Conor, and the boxing fans are old this, and real quickly, you know, Mayweather said in an interview with Stephen A. Smith, he wants to go after McGregor and put on a performance for the fans, for the America, but also for the blacks of the world, due to the racial comments that Conor McGregor made. He was interviewed after, I believe, the Toronto part of the tour. He was interviewed backstage by a member of Jimmy Kimmel's show, and when he was asked about Rocky III, the movie, Conor said, is that the one with the dancing monkeys? And somebody from his entourage or his camp said, yeah, that's the one with the dancing monkeys. For those of you that don't know, Rocky III is the one where Stallone, Rocky, goes to L.A. to train with Apollo Creed, and they're in a gym of black boxers, and, well, that's where Rocky kind of learns how to put a little balance in his step, i.e., maybe dancing monkey. So Do you think all this being said, Leo, I know it's a lot, but do you think all this being said can be legit and Mayweather is sincere and that, hey, I'm older, but I'm trying to go out with a bang? Or is it just pre-fight hype and we can expect here more of this as the fight gets closer?
I think this is just typical Floyd Mayweather, just building his opponent up and basically putting himself down to make people believe, to what we talked about earlier, to make people believe that Conor McGregor has a chance and that he's going to go in there and shock the world. I think we all know, you know, Floyd Mayweather is, you know, he's not at the top of his game. He's past his prime, but he is the superior boxer in a boxing ring against Conor McGregor. So he's trying to make the people believe, okay, he's selling pay-per-views, right? So he's making people believe Conor McGregor has a chance. So you gotta tune in, and I'm going to fight an exciting fight. So this is just Floyd selling you some good tickets.
That's true. And speaking of tickets, a report is coming out saying that there's still over 1,000 tickets left for the event. Now, yeah, and for a fight this big, but, you know, I want to get your perspective. Do you think it's the pricing of the fights? I think the cheapest is $3,500 or $2,500 for the fights. Or do you think it's the fact that as big as this fight was, it was just announced too quick? Too soon before it actually happened. You know, with Manny Pacquiao and Mayweather, we had not only 5 years of buildup, but we got several months before the fight actually happened when it was announced. This one came in June, then July was a tour, and then the fight. So it's almost like, wait, you're only going to give us 2 to 3 months to save up for this mega fight with the prices being inflamed? What do you think is the reason behind lack of ticket sales?
I mean, it's all of the above that's happening around this fight, is that it came together in such a quick, short notice that these guys aren't having enough time to really prepare for each other. They didn't really have any time to give us, you know, more than a couple of press conferences for such a big mega event. So a lot of people, I mean, I'm sure everybody knows about this thing going on, but they're just not seeing enough promotion behind it. And I think Showtime is getting ready to you know, upkick their promotional material at this time, but it's so inaccessible to a lot of people that it seems almost like this fight is not happening. And there was a little bit of deflation going on after the bad press conferences that like I said, they just happened too quick and in too many consecutive days. So, I mean, and then there's also the fact that Canelo and Triple G are going to be fighting a couple of weeks later, and those tickets are already sold out. So it seems like the boxing fans have already, you know, picked a side and they're going to go with that fight instead. So I think these guys are just, trying to promote themselves as much as possible in order to sell the fight and then have these tickets sold out.
I think Mayweather Promotions, Conor McGregor, the UFC, I think they kind of overestimated the fallout of this being announced on short notice. As you said, you got Canelo and Triple G, which is sold out for two reasons. One, we know that that's a big fight that people have wanted to see for the past couple of years, i.e. couple of years. Two, that was announced months ahead of time, way back in May, that it was going to happen in September. Plenty of time for people to save up for the fight. Also, the ticket prices aren't bloated like a Mayweather fight is. But then also, the boxing fans and the boxing community in itself has really let they really let their stance be known that they think the Mayweather-McGregor is a freak show, whereas Canelo-Triple G is the real boxing match. So boxing fans are going to go to that one, whereas for McGregor and Floyd, they're isolating out the MMA fans. I can't remember right now, and I do apologize, but I was watching an interview a couple of days ago, and someone was saying how when they talk to fans in Ireland, a lot of them were saying on the websites that they would love to be here, but they just can't make it because airplane flights, the tickets to get in, and then hotel prices is just too much in this short period of time. So I really do think they kind of overestimated what they were doing with the prices. Now, again, we still got a couple of weeks, so I'm sure we'll see an uptick in those tickets as it gets closer. But if the prices go down, Leo, me and you should really keep an eye out for it. I'm just saying. But I think they overestimated it.
Yeah, just like I told you a couple of weeks ago, somebody sent me a text message. They got the Mayweather-McGregor tickets at $5,000 each. So let's wait a couple of days before then, those $5,000 tickets will be $2,000.
Yeah. Well, I know Dana White did say that when he was showing a text that somebody bought tickets, he said that those weren't official tickets and they got scammed. So you got to be careful in this day and age. But we know the tickets are on sale now officially. So we'll see. But, yeah, as the fight gets closer, not only are we going to be talking about it more, but it is going to be interesting to see if the ticket prices do pick up for this event. Either way, it's still going to be a monumental and huge payday for both fighters.
Absolutely. I mean, it's still going to be a mega event, and it might do a lot better on pay-per-view than it does on at the gate. And the gate's going to do amazing. I think it's going to break records. So there's still time for people to buy their tickets and go in there and watch the circus unfold.
A circus indeed that is going to unfold live August 26th at the T-Mobile Arena right here in Las Vegas, Nevada. Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather. It is going to be phenomenal.
Can't wait. So, Kalani, we're 2 weeks removed from UFC 214. Like I said earlier, John Jones, very, very sportsmanlike again, with Daniel Cormier burying the hatchet. And recently he made the news that he said he would like to work with DC in the future as both being, you know, good role models in the black community. We know UFC does not really do a very good job at promoting MMA to the black community. And these are two of the top guys in the sport, really. So do you think John Jones and Daniel Cormier are really in a state of mind where they're going to, you know, work together on some kind of event in the future?
This was really interesting to have heard from John Jones. And Leo, you had mentioned this to me a while back when we were having a conversation about him. If John Jones just became himself, more natural, and didn't worry about the consequences of what he was saying. Obviously, don't go out there and say nothing, asinine. Just be yourself. If you don't like something, say you don't like it. If you like something, say you like it. Just be yourself. We've seen that from John Jones since he's come back this second time around. We've seen him be more authentic. We've seen him be more upfront about his likes and dislikes. He has spoken his mind about several issues, including fighters, training, et cetera, et cetera. To hear him say that he would like to work with Daniel Cormier in the future, it speaks volumes to not only the maturity, but to where this young man's mind is at, as far as, hey, look, I've made my mistakes in the past. That doesn't mean I can't write my future to make it better for not only myself and my family, but for those following me. For those that one, you could go to YouTube or you could go online to their website, but Sway in the Morning for SiriusXM had John Jones on there recently, and this is where Jones was speaking about it. I think it would be huge, as you said. MMA in the African American community in this country isn't as big right now as we would hope it would, as we would have hoped it would have been, just because it's still a lot to bring in. I mean, you go to the ground, a lot of people aren't familiar with some of the holds that jiu-jitsu practitioners and wrestlers are utilizing. Sometimes the tights that men are wearing is almost like, wait, why are you guys half naked and tight? You know, in boxing, you wear those big baggy shorts. So it's almost like, wait, I'm going to wrestle around with a guy on the ground. And, you know, for some of these, for some of the gyms that we see, not all of them are located like boxing gyms used to be in the inner cities to get some of the youth out there. Plus with football and basketball, a lot of athletes are going that route as well. But I would certainly love it if DC, a two-time Olympian, former champion, and John Jones, the greatest MMA fighter of all time, got together on some events, did some expos, or did some seminars, and really tried to spread the word and love of mixed martial arts, not only to the black community, but just to the youth in general, to all communities, to say, hey, we don't like each other for a lot of reasons. We have our differences. At the end of the day, we're both professionals. We're both mature adults who can put our differences aside for the greater good, and that is a sport that is bigger than us. That is mixed martial arts. So I hope that they can certainly do it in the future.
Yeah, it would certainly be a very good milestone for John Jones and DC. You know, you'd hate to see them go down like Ali Frazier, you know, where they were, you know, still fighting years, you know, in their 70s. I think they're a little bit past that, but if they were able to work together on something to really, you know, help the black community grow in MMA, I think that would be a fantastic role for both of these guys.
No, so certainly indeed. And, you know, not only would it help The sport in itself and potential youth who want to get involved in it, but it really helped the image of both of these guys. You know, DC is somebody who it took a while for the fans to come around to him, but I think the second time around in his matchup with Jones, more fans were kind of on his side than previously before. A lot of people got on him for what happened, for him crying in the Pulitzer interview with Joe Rogan, but a lot of people are also on his side there. So this could be something as well that shows, hey, you know what? This is one of the best fighters out there, and he's a pretty decent guy as well as far as trying to give back. And then for John Jones, just on a more personal note within our own community, you know, before he fought DC the first time back in 2015, there were some people talking about how John Jones, you know, kind of isn't, you know, one of those down type brothers. And I know that sounds maybe kind of ignorant, but, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, he's black, but, you know, he ain't like, you know, he ain't like Tyrone Bisbee black or whatever the case may be. But then, you know, it comes out, hey, he smokes cocaine and he, you know, run-ins with the law. And I'm just like, well, shit, you know, maybe he blacker than what we all thought. Again, I know that may sound kind of ignorant, but I'm just talking barbershop talk here. And I think for Jones, if he was able to do this, he would kind of show that, look, even though I don't wear my pants halfway off my ass, and yes, I was doing drugs and whatnot, but I could turn my life around, and I'm trying to help others to do the same. Hey, I can't ask for nothing more than for somebody who did wrong to try to do good and show the youth that there's more than just the bad life to choose. So it'll be awesome if they both can collaborate and do this.
Absolutely. Can't wait to see what these guys are going to do together in the future, if anything at all. So, Kalani, we talked earlier about Chris Cyborg, the story that she's had this year. She finally achieved her dream of becoming a champion. Now there's talks about Holly Holm stepping in to be her next opponent. There's really still no 145-pound women in the UFC, so they're having all these women climb up in weight in order to face Cyborg. Dana says he likes it. It sounds like, you know, they're talking about December, the end of December. What do you think about this fight? Is this the right fight to make at this time? Holly Holm, you know, she went on a 3-fight losing skid, and then she gets a nice win against Betch Kohea. Is she ready for Cyborg at this time?
Ready for? I mean, can you ever truly be ready for Chris Cyborg for what she brings to the table? You know, the best female mixed martial artist of all time, arguably the best combat sports athlete of all time. You know, I know Leila Ali and a couple other female boxers may have something to say about it, but Cyborg is certainly in the mix. It's tough to say because, yes, it is a very good matchup. Holly Holm being a former boxing champion, kickboxing champion, UFC champion, she has all the skill sets there. But she has kind of shown, was she just a one-hit wonder in the right matchup against Ronda Rousey to where she caught at the right time, the right matchup, and it just fell in her favor? You know, she's 1-3 since then. Her victory over Beth Cohera, I mean, let's be honest, there was a time where Betch, all of her victories in the UFC were over women who didn't have a UFC victory. So it's not like she was beating the cream of the crop here. And, you know, it was in unimpressive fashion up until the knockout at the end. 1-3, 0-1 at 145. Yeah, you could say her one shot at 145 against Jermaine Durandamy at 209 this year ended it with controversy. But personally, I would love to see if the UFC was to get Megan Anderson in there, the Invicta FC 145-pound champion. She was the original opponent for Cyborg at 214. It'd be a nice way to make the former Invicta champion, who had to vacate her title, for the current Invicta champion to go at it. And really, one of the only true 145-pound female fighters out there, who that's where she fights and stays at. So I would really rather see Megan Anderson or even Kat Zingano, who's been chopping at the bits with Cyborg online. But Holly Holm, you know, it does make sense. I just don't know if right now that's the matchup I personally would go for.
Now, it sounds as though Megan Anderson is, if in fact the visa issues are the reason she can't fight in the UFC, it sounds like those issues are gonna go on for a little bit longer. So if Cyborg wants to fight this year, it appears Holly Holm is the one that's being put forward. And there's something to be said about Holly Holm being a fantastic counterpuncher, and it's kind of, you know, sweet maid because Cyborg is such an aggressive fighter. She just loves to go forward. Can Holly Holm go in there and catch Cyborg as she leaves an opening, if she leaves an opening?
Now, certainly, you know, and that's something that, you know, we wonder. We saw fighters take a different approach than we used to see. All that she was tapping on her. She wasn't just bull and trying to just trying to go in there and mess everything up. She, you know, she waited. She stayed on the outside a little bit more, and she moved around, kind of showing that, hey, I'm not just a brawler or a puncher. I can do other things in this. It's just, and Holly Holm, she has shown this pretty against Rousey. If you do a bull rusher, if you do want to come right at her, you're just going to overpower her. She's got the foot movement, the skills it takes to move around, 1-2, and kick from the outside. So, yeah, stylistic-wise, this is a perfect match for both to put on a very good performance. As the current resume of Holly Holm, I just don't know if she was at the front of the list, but as you pointed out, Megan Anderson's a visa issues right now, because she's an Australian native, so she doesn't have to be a visa. With that going on, maybe she's not prepared due to that, and they have to go here. So it'll be interesting to see how the two class. It will certainly be two styles that will make for a good fight.
I do think it's a little bit early for Holly Holm to go in there and challenge at 145. I mean, she's like you said, Betch Correa. It was a tune-up fight more than anything, and she did go in there and you know, get her confidence back. So I think that's important. I think I would have liked to see her in one more marquee fight before she went in and stepped against the Cyborg. But if it's for a title, you got to step up, because you never know how often these are going to come, and there's always a chance that that it's going to be a favorable result for you. So we'll see how these two match up, if in fact they fight this year. Now, UFC 217, that's when the UFC is going back to New York City, and there's a lot of fights that are rumored on these on this card, and even some fighters like John Jones says he does not want to fight in New York City because the taxes are too high in that state. So a lot of people are going in and out of these conversations, but the front runners are Bisping and GSP. That fight is finally going to happen at 185. Robert Whittaker is out with an injury indefinitely, so this is the fight that we're getting. What do you think about GSP and Bisping finally happening?
I think it is a good fight, and we will see who is the better athlete on that day. Maybe that was a important fight, but I love it. When this fight was first announced, I know me and you kind of had it, which at the time made sense because the middleweight division had all these potential number one contenders, but now that losing, having injuries, you know, it kind of opens up and say, well, GSP can kind of slide in there now. But I think it's a great matchup. The return of George St. Pierre, greatest mixed of all time, winning the way champion, coming back at retirement to tie to history by being on fourth when second in a different than UFC. He's doing it against one of the most hate of all time in the sport, a great show, but like we talked about this earlier, you have certain venues, certain you have the best foot. You have to make it the most ranking wise. You got to put your best foot. You go to Russia, you got to have Khabib in a title. I don't care who it's against. Frog, let's do it. Put a time on the line. Let's do it. You just got to do that thing. If that's in Square Garden, biggest review king, we probably won't get Brock Lesnar back in time. Conor McGregor is back either. GSP is the next great game. Title, I think it's absolutely perfect.
I mean, I absolutely love the way that they're planning to stack this card. If, in fact, this is the card that we're going to get. Are the MMA gods going to be good to us and let us see Khabib versus Ferguson this time around? I would absolutely love to see that fight. But as far as GSP and Bisping, I mean, we talked about this at length throughout the summer, and I think you know my stance on the fight. I did not really agree with GSP coming up, but after what, you know, if Robert Whittaker is going to be out indefinitely and there's really no number one contender at 185, I'm doing a 180 here. I think I kind of want to see the GSP fight now because there's really no one else more worthy of a 185-pound title shot. So why not just do the money fight there and see if GSP can come back and reign at another division. So I really like the way that they're building this UFC in the Madison Square Garden card. I mean, it looks absolutely stacked. Joanna Jędrzejczyk is always a must-see. And if Frankie Edgar goes in there, he's basically in his backyard in New York City and tries to win a 145-pound title against Holloway, man, this is just a fight fan's dream.
Excuse me. If you from the fact that you won my betting versus GSP, wow, that's awesome. And you're telling me it's so many versus Rose. Oh my God. Please. Wait a minute. We might even throw back waking power and former champion Edgar. Are you trying to give me a heart attack? And now just saw on Instagram or excuse me, if we could take any more or in the world can only get so much. No. But yeah, it will be in this card and it's that there's certain times of the year and there's certain fight cards and certain venues. You gotta go all out and put all your chips in. Madison Square Garden is definitely one of those situations. If you see try all these fights in like you said, hopefully the fight gods are good to us and they allow us to not be resentment on this card and stay intact part. Now in the past you have talked about the other side of not having so many top fight cards. But with this line, would you really get upset if they put this many title fights in one card?
Are we talking about, I'm sorry, you were breaking up here. Are we talking about more than three title shots in one card?
Yes, more than three title shots in one card because you would have the middleweight championship, the women's strawweight, the men's featherweight, the men's bantamweight, and I believe Khabib and Ferguson will probably be in term title shot. Hey, that's what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 title shots on the card. Considering that it is started.
I think we've seen in the past what the UFC have to go through after they absolutely stack a card. We remember with UFC 205 in New York City where it was just such a mega card that everything else kind of dwindled towards the end of the year. And then they kind of crescendoed again with the return of Ronda Rousey. But man, what if every one of those fights turns out to be something like a Damian Maia versus Tyron Woodley? I mean, how many hours of pay-per-view is that going to be? You know, so I think they want to be a little bit careful about how they place so many title fights in one card. I think three is you know pushing the limit a little bit. So maybe it sounds like you know there's going to be three pay per views in the span of 2 months in November and December. So they might spread these out a little bit more as time moves up forward.
Yeah, for international. Or like we saw for UFC 214, put in three title fights on there. Madison Square Garden, got no problem with it. End of the year, beginning of the year, no problem with it. No problem whatsoever. In fact, the more the merrier. And as we said for 214, considering that we didn't know if John Jones was going to be there, considering his history. Well, if you look here, Cody had a qualified with DJ due to an injury. Khabib using injuries himself. Bisping's coming off a knee injury. It makes sense that you stack a card at a big venue just in case it does happen, and we are damn fight so we don't get to one or two main fights. You want the most worthy of those record numbers to continue to come in while you're at Madison Square Garden. Now, Leo, if you can, try to come back, brother. Technical difficulties right now, but as I was saying, with the history of these fighters have gone on, and you know, you look at Khabib with his pulled out of the UFC 2 times with Ferguson, you know, different policy. Coming off of policy. Max Holloway. You know, they can be counted on. Romania, Joanna, they can be counted on. G. Michael, they can be counted on. We don't want to happen to either of those fights going forward. As I said, it's going to be on the undercard of this particular bout right here. Unfortunately, we did lose Leo, but I am going to try to come back on in just a moment here. Let me see if I can get him back. Leo, are you there?
I can hear you.
Okay. Now, that was you, me, or just the thing we call the internet messing with us right there. But, yeah, saying is just how you need insurance policy for some of these fighters because you don't want a car that's supposed to be really good riddled by injuries versus just the UFC 200 last year. What happened to that car that was so stacked, but then by the time it happened, it was like, So, yeah, I was just trying to point that out as we were having some technical difficulties.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're trying to tempt the MMA gods here, and it just seems so good to be true to have so many stacked fights on one card. But at the end of the day, I mean, do some of those fights drop out like they did in UFC 200, or are we going to get something like UFC 208, which we got last February, which it was just so dwindled with UFC stars that it was almost like a missable pay-per-view. So you really don't want to do that either. So I think the UFC needs to find a decent middle ground in terms of how they stack their cards.
Yeah, well, you know, right now they need some big cards. You know, they're trying to, as you said, New York is a place where they suddenly want to make sure that they put on a card that's going to make sure that they get them big numbers, not only at the game, but also pay-per-view wise, so they can take out their profit. So it's interesting to see how the UFC 217 card turns out in itself from there. Leo?
Yep.
Okay, I didn't know if you were going to hear me. Real quick, as we're coming up towards the end of the show here, and you know, not to, because we don't have anything else, but we had a call this weekend, UFC Fight Night in Mexico City. We saw in the main event, this unanimous decision victory over Brandon Moreno. These are two top 10 flyweights going at it. What did you think of this victory over Moreno in Mexico City?
Man, it looked like such a weird fight to begin with when Brandon Moreno was doing some kind of a Tai Chi maneuvers there to try to confuse Sergio Pettis, and then he takes his back and he gets a very, very dominant round. A lot of people are saying it might have been a 10-8 round for Brandon Moreno, and then Sergio Pettis just starts coming back, and he looks absolutely fantastic. I think he was a little bit shy to call for a title shot. I think he's just about ready to go in there because he's beaten a lot of the top guys in the division. So Sergio Pettis might be one of the next top contenders. He looked really good against Brandon Moreno. Absolutely shut him down in the striking department.
With Sergio Pettis, obviously when he did have a loss in his career, he was all hype. He's not going to be as good. But we're starting to see that with the training, trying to get him more and his skills are becoming more rounded, that you know what? It's Sergio Pettis. Name for the flyweight division has been, there's a possibility that next up, Demetrius Johnson has seen everybody else in the a couple of times. So, Sergio Pettis might either in the more sense of just, hey, this should be the next step, or with more music, he can do this. Talk about Moreno and his stuff. This went out there, everyone was obviously, do you think Pettis and Bruce rely too much on the fan kicks given the high that Anthony is and they try too hard to get him? That's just part of their style. And hit or miss, they're going to go. Leo. Okay, look, again, everyone, I do apologize that we are having some technical difficulties. Look like I lost Leo once again. I think that there's a lot of pressure on both of these fighters to go out there and put on tremendous shows. Obviously, for the fans, you do want to go out there and say, okay, look, let's go out here and let's do the best we can to put on. To look at it and enjoy what was a down performance. Now, that's not necessarily the case. Also on the card, we had a catchweight bout at 119 pounds. Alexa Grasso defeats Randa Marcos via split decision, and this was a pretty interesting matchup in itself. You had – wait a minute. Leo, are you there again?
Here. Man, what's up with this North Korean Wi-Fi?
Man, I gotta tell you, he must not like what we're talking about right now. See what happens, man, when you talk bad about the UFC in New York. Shame on you, Leo.
We'll have Ariel Helwani come in defending.
There you go. Well, he's the one that, you know, Helwani knows.
All right, so let's talk about this little card that could, because it was such an exciting card, and you know, we beat a record for most first round finishes. So we talked about Sergio Pettis. Now we have Alexa Grasso against Randal Marcos. Very controversial split decision for Alexa Grasso. What did you think of these two?
You know, I thought it was a good fight. Unfortunately, it had to be at a catchweight bout. You know, the weight issue was there. But as I tell you all the time, Leo, anytime it's a close bout and it has to go to the final round, can you really say it was an upset? Can you really say it was controversial? What's controversial is, hey, I've won four rounds and you win the fifth and they give you the fight. That's controversial. But if it's 2-2 going into the fifth, it can go either way. That really shouldn't be controversial. But I thought it was a great showing by both females to go out there, put on a tremendous show of heart. Hey, it might have had some quote-unquote controversy against the Suns. Maybe they run it back, or maybe next time they realize they got to do more throughout the three rounds that they're given, so that if it does go to the judges, they don't leave it to chance, and they ensure that they really do get that victory that they deserve.
I thought Alexa Grasso looked fantastic coming off a very tough loss against her last opponent. So, yeah, I mean, she looked very good on, you know, her hands looked really good. Randal Marcos also, you know, she stood in there against her in the boxing department, but Alexa Grasso slowly showed that she was the better striker of the two, and I think the judges got it right. I think Alexa Grasso did enough at the end of the third round to steal it from Randa, and it was a very exciting fight. I would like to see these two run it again, and Alexa Grasso is one of those up-and-coming stars that if they can build her enough and not rush her in there against someone like a Yoan or break her into the top five too soon, I think she can develop into a very, very good contender at 115 if she does not decide to move up to the 125 division.
Yeah, it is going to be something to see. Alexa Grasso certainly comes in with a lot of promise and a lot of hype behind it. At only 23 years old, 10-1 in the UFC with four knockouts. You know, this is somebody that the UFC was like, hey, we're really getting behind her. Now, she lost her UFC – well, excuse me, it wasn't her UFC debut, but she did lose her last UFC fight against Felice Herring. So bouncing back in this one, getting the victory is really good for her. We'll see what she can do going forward with her career, if she can build on this momentum.
Absolutely. Can't wait to see what's next for both of these two.
No, indeed. Both of these females are going out of their game, and they go out there and put on good performances. Now, speaking of good performances, Leo, Nico Price knocking out Alan Jouban in the first round. My gosh. Now, Alan Jouban, you can't hurt the pretty face now, but, man, did he take a couple punches to the face. What would you make of Nico Price going out there with a tremendous performance?
Absolutely stunning. I mean, this guy's just coming out of nowhere. You know, we don't even know who he is, but he's been undefeated for such a long time, and to go in there and shock Alan Jouban, who's got a hell of a chin on him, but he just was not able to withstand what Nico Price had to offer him. And that's two in a row now for Alan Jouban, so maybe, you know, he needs to reset and try to take a manageable fight for him, or maybe try to change the vision. Something needs to change for him. But I mean, when you get caught with love like that from Nico Price, there's not a lot you can do.
Nico Price has been undefeated since 2012. He's been 0 with 8 knockouts, but his last contest earlier this year at UFC Fight Night against Alex Moreno, that got overturned, which was a KO victory after Price tested positive for marijuana. So this was a tremendous bounce back for him. He shows that he's got power in his hands, and like you said, Jouban is one of the fighters out there with a very good chance for him. It just shows you the power that Price does hold with his hands. Leo, I want to ask you about this one, and I'm going to skip for a fight here just real quick, because, you know, Humberto Vanen got a tremendous knee KO over Martin Bravo.
The biggest underdog on the card. And, man, what a way to deliver. Talk about underdog. And just a really good up-and-coming guy from Team Oyama, so I'm really excited to see what this guy has to come in the future.
It's going to be interesting to see what he can do going forward and how everything plays out for him. Was this a shock at the moment, or, as you said, is it something he can build up and build a tremendous career? And speaking of tremendous careers, Leo, we might see the end of one tremendous career might come to an end in a way that, well, fortunately, a lot of careers in the cage tend to be a loss. We got Rashad Evans losing to Sam Alvey. This is not bold for the former UFC season two winner. He's now 19-7 in his career, and he's 0-2 his new in the middleweight division. He's lost his last four, and he's 2-6 in his last eight bouts. What do you make of Rashad Evans? Does he just not have it anymore, or was it just Eddie Luck wasn't on his side again?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a Rashad Evans that's just a shadow of himself. I mean, we're seeing a very, very different Rashad Evans. He's going back to his basically early days of his fighting. He's just trying to look for the takedown and trying to not to get knocked out. And I mean, where does your UFC career move forward if you just can't beat Sam Alvey and you're buried in a card in the UFC fight night? And you're a former champion with a name, but you're being buried deep in a free card on FS1. So you can't beat Sam Alvey, and you're not getting really the takedowns that you're looking for. Fights are starting to become just kind of tedious to watch. So I think Rashad Evans is showing signs of a fighter that just might not have it in him anymore.
Now, people were knocking Sam Alvey. As you say, well, when you lose to someone like Sam Alvey at 31 years old is 31-9 with 18 knockouts. Now, I do get he's not one of the elite fighters, so I totally get what you're saying in regards to that. But his last, I want to say, his last fight, he's 5-1. So himself, but again, I do get the sentiment of where it's at. Unfortunately, for Evans, this just continues his downfall. And for Evans, he's a case of what happens when you get an injury at the later part of your career. In 2013, the knee injury was very devastating. He had to sit out for 2 years, and then he came back and he just started Daniel Kelly. Now Sam Al got injuries over him. And Evans is obviously a future Hall of Famer. We got that, but it's really hard to look at his career and say, man, what could have been if one injury happened, and what if he would have decided to the weight a lot sooner in his career, and later on when you get older, because me and you know, as you get older, the weight doesn't help you anyway. Hey, maybe it would help you be sure about that. So, did Rashad Evans just wait too long to try to take his luck?
Hello, yeah, I think you cut out there at the end, but I think you were talking about Rashad Evans and his weight. I think this is something else that's working against Rashad Evans in his career, is that most fighters, as they age, they move up in weight class. And now Rashad Evans, in his late 30s, he's having to cut down to 185, and he's not having any success. It might be that, from years and years of cutting weight, and now he's having to cut more weight at a more advanced age, maybe this is just taking too much of a toll on him, and he's just not able to perform as we're used to seeing him. So maybe a move at 205 to see if he still has it in him would be something that he might want to pursue. But other than that, I really don't see very many matchups for Rashad Evans that he could really take advantage of and try to revitalize a career.
It's really for him matchup against Vitor Belfort end of the career. He could wait for sure. Rashad Evans is a fighter that if the UFC had won the 95-pound division, he really, he would have been probably a champion there as well, and it would have fit a smaller heavyweight. And now cutting down the middle, just old, where his body just isn't what it probably could have been. So, hey, he's a guy who's fighter heavy. He came with a heavyweight champion. Then with some of the best, Rampage Jackson, Jump, highlighted out of a Chuck Liddell, which still painful to watch the TRT several times, Forrest Griffin, and others as well. So he's in there with who? So this is the Emperor Evans. It's you know what? Sometimes you can always win at the end. Leo, going on, and I'm able to find your social media.
Yeah, so you were really cutting off there. I think I heard the gist of what you're saying. So, yeah, you can find me on social media at ShowerLeo. And, yeah, one thing I do want to talk about is, again, the UFC Tuesday Night Contender Series from Dana White is absolutely banging on UFC Fight Pass. So check it out when you have a chance. And UFC Fight Pass, it's growing its library. So now we're getting Polaris, which is going to be happening this weekend. So Dylan Danis against Gary Tonin in a rematch of their jiu-jitsu match. So check that out this weekend. I mean, there's no MMA action going on, so we gotta find something to watch, guys. So check out Polaris 5 on UFC Fight Pass.
Well, there you go. Be sure to check it out, and hopefully maybe we can have our first guest on here talking MMA, some boxing, and some other things. I'm here, but we will get no promises made. Be sure to follow me on Twitter. Where can I find you on Twitter?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at ShowerLeo.
Follow me on Twitter at KLU11, KLUA1. Next time, everybody, take care. Peace.
Start it.
Johnny on the track.
Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here, nigga. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team here, nigga. Started from the bottom, now we here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team fucking here. I done kept it real from the jump.